Welcome to the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom podcast with Jacob Ayers, providing actionable content to help you along your journey to financial freedom through real estate investing. As the premier asset class, real estate has helped ordinary people just like you amass fortunes. The benefits of passive income from real estate investing will allow you to live a life you want. And now, your host, entrepreneur, real estate investor, and apartment deal syndicator, Jacob Ayers.
Hi, and welcome to the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom podcast, episode 42. Today, our guest is Matt Faircloth. Matt is the president and co-founder of the DeRosa Group, which is a developer and owner of commercial and residential property with the mission to transform lives through real estate. Matt got started investing in real estate 12 years ago with a $30,000 loan as seed capital. Since then, he has grown from nothing to a six-person company, controlling over 150 units of residential and commercial properties throughout New Jersey and Pennsylvania. DeRosa, based in Trenton, New Jersey, has completed over $15 million in real estate transactions involving private capital, including fix and flips, single-family home rentals, mixed-use buildings, apartment buildings, and tax lien investments. Matt Faircloth is an active contributor to the Bigger Pockets blog and was featured on the Bigger Pockets podcast twice, along with many other podcasts and radio shows. He's also the former chair of South Jersey Real Estate Investors. Today, I welcome on the show, Matt. Matt, thanks for joining us.
You are welcome, Jacob. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, Matt, could you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and how you got started investing in real estate?
Certainly. Well, who I am now versus where I am when I got, who I was when I got started are two extremely different people. But let's talk about how I got started, and then I can talk to you about what I'm up to now. I got started in 2005, investing full-time. I was investing part-time before that. So I was working for a company called Ingersoll Rand as one of their traveling sales reps. You know, just like probably a lot of your other guests, read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And it blew my mind and said, okay, cool. I'm going to do this thing full-time and I'm going to build a different life for myself and go invest, right? So I started, I enrolled my wife in her and I partnering up and being real estate entrepreneurs together. And when we got married, she agreed to be the single breadwinner for our family. I quit my job and started our real estate business full-time from that in 2005. So I've been investing full-time since 2005.
Yeah, awesome. And so what were some of the properties markets you initially got involved in?
First, it was a house hack. I mean, I lived in a single family home, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. Rented out two of the bedrooms to two buddies of mine. I should clarify, when I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, I was dating with my wife. And so it blew my mind so much. I said, you know what? I got to buy a house. And so I went out and bought a home for me to get myself into, moved in, rented out two bedrooms to my buddies. My mortgage was $940 a month. My two buddies were paying me $1,000 a month. So I was making $60 a month and living there for free. So that was my very, very first deal. Second deal, my girlfriend, now wife, and I wanted to get into investing and we wanted to ramp up our business quickly. And so we went to her father who had some extra cash and he loaned us $30,000 for our first deal. And it was a unsecured line, got us into a deal and bought a duplex with it. And got the tenants turned around, renovated the building, you know, turned over units and everything like that. Turned over both units, put new tenants in, bought it for 150, and this is 2004 numbers. And then the real estate boom came in and we sold it for like 218, I think. So that was one of our first deals. And we also, in the uptick, we refinanced it several times as the market was booming in that part of the world, because this is what you did. You would refinance a property every year to pull money out. Because of how quickly things were booming back then. So those were our first couple of deals. Then I quit my job and we sold that duplex and did a 1031 exchange, which I can get into what that is, and bought a couple of small multis, which we shot a video about because I, on my YouTube page, we sold that duplex, bought a couple of four families, and then slowly acquired more four families on the block, and then sold five of those four families together, branded as a 20-unit apartment complex. Sold that in just a few years ago. But it took us, you know, 8 years to build that portfolio and then sold it after. So that was the culmination of one of our first deals.
Yeah. So you got started like many people, and that is, you know, buying a house, renting out some rooms, doing a little house hack, quickly kind of realized the power of small multifamily. So you essentially bought a duplex next and turned that into, what is it, 20 units?
Yeah. It took a couple of years, but yeah, that's true. That's what we did.
And you did that with, through kind of the power of 1031 exchanges. Can you talk about what that is and how that helped you grow?
Sure. Well, the 1031 exchange helps real estate investors circumvent what the biggest problems in real estate is. It's a double, it's real estate, and that's income taxes. Real estate investors enjoy the best benefits of real estate tax through things like depreciation and passive income that's taxed less and things like that. But real estate investors also bear the major brunt in income tax, which can really stunt your growth as a real estate investor in paying major tax payments to the IRS through fix and flips, or if you sell one of your rental properties. And so what a 1031 exchange does is it allows you to take the sale of your rental property and take all the gain that you make and roll it into the purchase of a new property. So in that circumstance, we sold a property, as I said, for around, I think it's like 215, 220, somewhere in there. Just for conversation, let's say that we made like 60,000 on that sale. We took that 60K and rolled it in to be the equity, the purchase money down, the down money for the purchase of a larger property. And so we bought 2 4-family buildings for $320,000 a piece. So $650,000 all in, right? Now, this was back in the day where, believe me, I'm dating myself, but in these days, you could buy a property with a first mortgage and a second mortgage on like 3 to 5% down for a investment property, not owner occupied, no nothing. And the first mortgage would be something called negative amortization, which means that the amount that you're paying to the bank wouldn't even cover the entire principal balance, wouldn't even cover the entire debt service that was due. So the amount you owed on the property would actually go up every year. So you would start out owing the bank $290,000, and then at the end of year one, you'd owe $293,000. But because the real estate market was going up by 10% a year, it was no big thing for your mortgage payment, for your mortgage amount to go up as the market went up, right?
Right. It sounds like a strange concept these days, but I know
that. Not a bit, right. But think about it back then. And back then they had sustainable growth at like 5 to 10% a year. So why wouldn't you loan to a borrower to have the mortgage go up every year like that, to have the principal amount go up every year? Now it seems insane. And it is insane that they were willing to do it, but they were. So we took it. So we rolled that 60K in to buy those 2 4-families on with second mortgages and every negative amortization on them and everything else. We did a 1031 to roll into those two deals and bought those. And then over time, over about 6 months to a year, another owner on the block approached us, and these were older folks that were looking to retire and stuff like that. They came to us, we bought their property. Then the bottom fell out of the market, and then another property on the block went up for sale, and this one went up for sale for like $140,000, right? So it's half what we paid for the other one, or more than half we paid, less than half we paid for the other one, but it needed a bunch of work. So by that point, we were already connected with private investors, which I can get into, how that works. We had lined up a few private investors that were willing to work with us with funds from their retirement accounts, like a self-directed IRA. So they gave us a sector self-directed IRA funds, and we bought that property for $140K, invested another, say, like $80,000 into it to renovate it and bring it up to a high caliber. So that puts four units in our portfolio.
Right.
Then another one on the block comes up, and this one's in bad shape, and this one's been completely dilapidated and owner completely neglected it. And we bought that one for $75,000, Jacob.
Wow.
Yeah. But remember, the other stuff on the block, I bought for $320,000, somewhere in there, right?
Comparable properties.
Identical properties. This is where a developer came in, right after World War II, because there's a GM factory around the corner from there. Nope. Not open anymore, unfortunately, but a developer was building housing for the guys coming back from World War II to come and work in this factory. And so this is factory worker housing, like just 4 units in a row, one bedroom's on one side, 2 bedrooms on the other side of the building, just like little concrete boxes. Solid, very predictable, very easy to figure out what was going on with him. And he just built a swath of them on the street. And we bought up a little over half the block in a couple of years, and bought that last one for a really great deal, completely gut renovated it, and probably ended up putting another 150 into that one, and sold the whole thing a couple of years later.
Yeah. So you said you were buying these as the market was starting to fall. I'm assuming that was in about 2008, 2009.
So I bought on both bookends of the market. So I bought the nicely redone ones when the market was on the uptick. So let's say like 2007. Yeah. That was like right when the bottom, when everybody was feeling great and we were just peaking, if you will. And then I bought the other ones a couple of years later after the bottom had fallen out in like 2010, 2011, somewhere in there. That's when I bought the other ones.
Yeah. So what I'm wondering is what kind of set you and those other owners apart in terms of you were able to manage and hold on to your properties and they weren't? What you were doing differently, or was it luck?
Well, there's a lot of absentee owners out there. There's people all over the U.S. that want to invest in real estate, but without local management and local people that can drive up on the property and check it and walk it and caress it and take care of it and make sure it's not falling apart, it will fall apart, because there's an old adage that what is not maintained will deteriorate. You know, it's just entropy. It's what happens, what the world does. And you have to fight back against things corroding by constantly being there and touch up painting and touching this, touching that, and fixing this and fixing that. And these were absentee owners that were out of state that were just collecting rent checks. And maybe they had some relationships with some local maintenance guys that would run by there and unclog a toilet for the tenant every here and again. But for the most part, you never saw these owners. My company, I personally, when I first got started, I did all the showings. I did all the, you know, tenant relations. I dealt with all the tenants hands on. They all had my cell phone number and would gladly call me at 10 o'clock at night when I was out with friends on a Friday night. You know, no problem to call Matt on those nights. So I've since grown from there, but I was still a hands-on local manager myself. I now have a management team that manages my real estate. But I think the biggest key, Jacob, is having local management that's truly hands-on on the real estate. Not everybody does that. And I think it's a mistake, because the properties will eventually start to show that there's nobody around the corner from the property to check on it.
Yeah, awesome, Matt. Good points. So let's talk about how you've grown and what your portfolio is looking like now. Can you talk about some of your current projects, what you have going on?
Sure. Well, in the beginning part of our career, we cut our teeth on management and we built a really solid management company. Then I've got, you know, several management employees that run our assets and, you know, are the day-to-day operators of what we do. I've built my portfolio to be primarily multifamily and mixed-use properties. So in urban environments like Trenton, you know, there could be a storefront below a bunch of apartments. A lot of multifamily assets, like we've got a couple of 10 units, got an 18 unit. We bought a 49 unit out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And we are getting larger into spaces of buying a 200 unit apartment complex now that I mentioned to you offline. But yeah, that's our next swap, is to get into like larger on-site managed, you know, third-party managed assets that are more regional than right around the corner from where I live.
All right. So you're really starting to scale up. Could you talk about how you've grown from those duplexes, fourplex kind of days to now you've got your 18, 49, 200 unit kind of apartments? Could you talk about how that growth looked for you in that transition?
Yeah, it's all about, I focused a lot of my effort in the business. And because I systematized what I do and got a property manager in place a property management team in place to do what I used to do, which is to run the assets day to day, it's freed me up to raise money. And I spend most of my time working with investors and finding opportunities. And so I syndicate most of my deals. So if I'm doing a fix and flip, and we do a lot of fix and flips too, that fix and flip is typically funded by investors that are either just lending into the deal and making a great return on their money, or are investing in the deal and making a smaller return, but a chunk of profit, right?
Right.
One of the two. So we're structured one of those two ways. I also funnel money into syndicated apartment complexes. That could be buying an 18 unit in Philadelphia like we did, or that could be buying larger properties or whatever. But these people are coming on board and investing alongside us on deals like that. And we form the legal and all the documents that have to be in place, and they sign off and they put the money in, and then we manage the asset and get a chunk of the profit ourselves.
Yeah. And syndication is something we've talked a lot about with the audience recently. And so we're kind of familiar with that business model. Could you talk a little bit about how you use syndication to buy that 18 unit? And I know you've got some pretty unique experiences on the back end of that and how you've kind of grown it into something else. Could you jump into those details?
Well, I mean, I'd like to say I was just brilliant and this is how I did it and everything like that. But just in life tends to make you smart in hindsight, you know, or it makes you look wise because you made a bunch of mistakes, or smart because you did something really great. And a lot of the egotistical people take credit for it. I just am grateful that it happened, you know. But for me, we bought this 18 unit in Philadelphia. And it was a 50% occupied building. The prior owner built the building with his construction company, owned it for 40 years. The place was called Carroll Manor. And it was called Carroll Manor because this guy's wife's name was Carroll. So he just built the place, named the joint after his wife, and owned it for years. Fast forward to 2013, property had a fire. And you know, one of the tenants was smoking, had an oxygen respirator thing that caught fire and was, you know, burnt. Yeah, I know, right? Great idea. Burnt half the building up. And he did the right thing with the insurance money, invested it back in the space, and rebuilt the property. And then just, guess by this point, he's like 70 some years old, had run out of gas, didn't want to do it anymore, and said, you know what, I'm done. I'm going to put the property up for sale. So he puts it up for sale for $1 million. We give him full asking. It's 50% occupied because, I mean, he was just, you know, breaking a lot of rules around, like, things you're not supposed to do. Like, he wouldn't rent to families with kids, you know, like, even though he had a bunch of two bedrooms, right? He's like, no, I don't rent to kids. And I was like, well, are you a 55 plus? Are you allowed to do that? No, I'm not a 55 plus. No, I just, if they tell
fair
me
housing
they have
doesn't apply to me.
If they tell, right, no, everywhere else except for this one address, this one little spot in Philly that I'm allowed to do that, you know? And so we opened up the doors and did it the right way and did more mass marketing. I mean, he was advertising in the paper and a sign on the building. That's how he was advertising. In 2013, he's in the newspaper, you know? I forget the last time I took out a newspaper ad for real estate. So he stepped out. We bought the building. We leased out the remaining units. Turned a lot of those over, you know, renovated, got the rents way up on the property, and it's performing well. Now, we bought it through a syndication. So we raised $500,000 from our investors, and we took part of that money and put it into a few, we bought some tax liens, and then put it into some preferred return deals, like investments with preferred rate of returns and stuff like that. And we put about $350,000 into this building to buy it. So bring it up to now, and we have the building sold. It's under contract to sell for $1.5 million.
Awesome.
So we're making about $500,000 increase equity. I could just pay our investors back, but they're very happy. They made about a 12% return on investment on their money about last year. So we're going to take that windfall, let's call it that. And like I said, life tends to make you look smart. So we look really smart. Like, we saw the uptick in Philadelphia and we saw that we were going to, you know, buy this place, fix it and flip it. But honestly, I wanted to hold it long term. It's in a great location and this and that. But I saw the opportunity to cash out and to trade into larger stuff. So things that I didn't think were possible for me a couple of years ago are now possible. Like, we've raised our syndication game and we've gotten into larger spheres of investors. And we're now buying a 198 unit building in North Carolina. The sale of this property will be traded into that sale through something called a tenant in common. Now, it's like, if a 1031 exchange is real estate investing 202, a tenant in common is like real estate investing. Like, that's like graduate level conversation. I will try and explain it to you
but it's
very complicated. I don't understand everything there is to know about it because it's my first time doing it. But in a nutshell, this, let's call it 123 LLC, the one that owns the building in Philly, will buy this new property, but it will only own a percentage of it. So it'll buy in, but it'll own a percentage of the property and it'll be on title. And so the deed of this new property in North Carolina will read XYZ LLC, 20% ownership, and then it'll say 123 LLC, 80% ownership, right? In the name on the deed. It won't just say one company, the other company. It'll say the company name and the percentage ownership that they have. So that the company that I have in Philly that's selling into this property in North Carolina will have direct, unimpeded interest in this real estate. So it's not investing in the deal as an equity partner. It's coming in and buying a chunk of the dirt alongside this other LLC.
Okay.
So,
and is that because, Matt, you're 1031 exchanging from a syndicated deal?
No, it's because you're trading into a syndicated deal. So we're the current syndicated deal, all the investors are happy. Everybody wants to keep it going. So we're selling out and buying into this building in North Carolina, but the we're making about $700,000 on the sale, right? So the $700,000 profit that we're making is not enough to buy this building in North Carolina by itself.
I see.
Right?
Okay.
You know, with the total equity raise of the building in North Carolina is $2.4 million. So I can account for $700,000 of that by putting in this one investor, but I can't account for the whole thing, but I've got to go raise the rest. So it's a way to give a small slice of the pie to the XYZ LLC, right? And it's also, it's funny because this thing happens in larger instances. Let's say you've got an investor that owns just a few homes, right? A few houses. They sell them. They want to do a 1031 exchange. There's larger companies that'll assemble a tenant in common arrangement around an office building. Like, you know, let's say we want to go out and buy the Empire State Building. Well, you and I could get enough investors together that could all do 1031 exchanges to go and buy the Empire State Building together. the title would read really, really long because it would have to name every investor in that building would have to be directly on the title. They couldn't go and take the proceeds from their sale and all lump it into a new LLC and have that new LLC go buy the real estate. They have to buy the real estate directly. It has to be held in the same name that the prior property was sold in.
Right.
So
right.
They own 100% of 123 Main Street and they sell that. They take the profit from 123 Main Street sale and they buy a much smaller interest in 456 Main Street, which is a way larger property or something like that. So they have a smaller interest in that, but it's an undivided interest, meaning they're not diluted. They're just a small, they just don't own the whole thing. They own 20% of it or 10% or 5% or 2%, whatever it is.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, that's certainly
super, super complicated. I did my best to explain it, but it's a new thing to me too. So I hope I didn't blow everybody's mind there, but that's a tenet in common.
Good stuff.
As I understand it. So
yeah, it's definitely a new strategy we've talked about on the show. You did a great job at explaining it in simple terms. So
thank you.
All right, Matt. So what are some of your other projects you're working on?
Let's see. What are some other things I'm working on? Doing a lot of fix and flips. You know, stabilizing a few properties that we have that we had a business partnership go bad in my company that I'm in the middle of cleaning up some things around that. So that's like a not the greatest side of real estate because real estate is a great thing when it does well, but real estate's kind of a bear to unwind when it's not doing well. And so I caution your listeners to be very cautious of the real estate partnerships they get themselves in. Because it's very tough to unwind real estate partnerships if they don't work, right? If they're not working. So I'm in the middle of that and fixing and flipping properties and then managing the day-to-day of the existing real estate, you know, and working on a few things with I do a lot of work with biggerpockets.com. So I keep busy with them too.
Yeah, right. So Matt, people who are oftentimes you see people who are syndicating apartment deals aren't also simultaneously flipping properties. Why are you doing both? I mean, does it pay off to try to grow those smaller single family portfolios of yours when you're trying to take down 198 unit apartment complexes?
Well, for a lot of different reasons, yes, it does. A, my bread and butter is the smaller stuff. I understand the smaller stuff. So if my wife and I could go out and buy a couple of single family homes and put them in our kids' names directly or something like that, you know, I would, and we have done that. And, we've got an LLC that's just the two of us. And, that's pretty much our kids' college fund. And so we're going to buy more properties in that. But I'm not going to go buy 198 unit apartment complexes in that LLC because I got to go raise the equity for that. And I got to give away ownership for that. So I do smaller stuff. And that allows me to have just my wife and I build our base income. I also do larger apartment complexes because we have investors that come to us that don't have the time, but do have the money to invest in real estate. And so those same investors are open to shorter term projects. And right now, and in the current marketplace, it's a good time to be flipping property. And so we do a lot of flips, not because I'm super passionate about them or whatever, but because there's an opportunity there, because the market is absorbing flips a lot right now and doing the market is doing well renovated property. So there's money to be made in flips, bottom line. And the investor database I have is A, interested in long stuff, like 10-year investment stuff, but they also are very appealed to take a six-month deal. Like, okay, yeah, I'll give you money to go and buy, renovate, and sell a single-family home, and we get our money back. So what I've been able to do is to spend my time working with investors, working with people with money, and then I put together implementers of people that are able to implement an idea, a vision, a plan that I have in that flip, in that apartment building project, whatever it is. And I bring in the vision, the idea, the equity, the inspection, the front person, the quarterbacking, the ownership of the project and everything like that. And they implement the plan. So that's what we do. And it really has to do with the way we positioned ourselves with our investors.
Yeah, good. Well, it sounds like it makes sense for you and sounds like it's a well-oiled machine. So props to you.
Sometimes. Sometimes I'm the guy running around with the oil can, but it depends. Depends on the day.
Yeah. So switching gears, Matt, a little bit, you've talked a little bit about building your management company. Can you talk a little bit about how you've built your team and how that team's kind of contributed to your success thus far?
I think that we've done a good job establishing a specific culture at our company. And I think that it pays to do that. If you've got somebody who's looking to take this business seriously and wants to play the long game in real estate, you've got to start thinking about your company culture and the message, the branding your company should have, everything like that. Yeah, there's people out there, hopefully not listening to your show, that want to just be a little flash in the pan, make a couple hundred thousand dollars, and then they're done, you know, or they're not as intentional about making this a long play. And so I think establishing your culture in your company and thinking about what your company really stands for is the biggest key to building a strong team, meaning like employees or people that are strategically aligned to you.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. All right, Matt. So you're out there doing lots of deals. You've got your fix and flips going on. You've kind of mentioned building some of that portfolio up for your children's college fund. Mm-hmm. You're raising money to buy large apartment deals. Why are you doing all this? What are your reasons why? What keeps you going?
Well, in the beginning, it was what kept me going was because I had made such a big mess that I had to spend a lot of my time getting it cleaned up. But now I keep doing what I'm doing because it's allowed me to really enjoy life to its fullest. Because I think that real estate investing, you know, which is why a lot of your listeners or people out there want to get involved in real estate, is because real estate has the potential to give you back your time. It is a way to work and do things without being compensated by the hour. And I used to get compensated by the hour. Most people out there that still have jobs are either compensated by the hour or compensated by the achievement. So it could be paid real estate, or it could be like, you know, paid a commission, or could be paid hourly. But there's few ventures that pay you forever or pay you for the foreseeable future after you've done the action one time. And real estate's one of those things. And so what keeps me going now, it's not why I got started, but what keeps me going now is the ability to really own my time and then have to spend time with my kids, or, you know, come home early from work so I can hang out with you here on Skype and stuff like that, you know, and not have somebody I'm beholden to do that. It's allowed me to just really control my life a lot more. Yep. So that's why.
Makes 100% sense. Matt, what are your future goals?
Future goals. I'd like to do more multifamily syndications because they've been great and it's allowed me to meet a lot of great people and expand into markets that I wouldn't be able to be in if I wasn't doing multifamily syndications. So like there's a certain magic that happens in larger property because you can put in local management and stuff like that. So because you can put a local manager into running the asset for you, that enables me to do business in places I don't live, that I don't live anywhere near, you know, and so I'm doing deals in North Carolina and this and that. So I'd like to do more of those, more syndicated deals. And I'd like to, in the next 5 years, I'd like to start peeling back my time to where I spend more and more of my time hanging with my kids, hanging with my wife. And I want to either be on or off. And so when I'm on, I'm probably putting in a lot of time in the office and scrambling and challenging myself and, you know, really, really engaging in something. And if I'm off, I really want to be able to have the capacity to really disconnect. Right now, I don't. I'm still standing in the middle of everything. And so my future goals, Jacob, is to remove myself from that to where I'm more on the peripheral. And I listen to a lot of Tim Ferriss, and Tim Ferriss refers to himself in his business as the ghost in the machine. He doesn't have a job title in his business. Tim Ferriss doesn't. He just pops up where he's needed. And if that means that he's got to show up on the manufacturing floor of his vitamin business, he does. If that means that he gets to disappear and completely pull out, then he can do that too. And nobody would even know that he did because he doesn't have a job title. He doesn't have a direct responsibility. He just owns it. And so that's where I'm looking to go, is to a point where I'm the owner, but not directly involved in any of it, just kind of popping up where I need to be popping up.
Yeah, awesome. Kind of using your time where it's most valuable at in your company.
Yeah, and if it's not needed anywhere, then to own it and to spend my time either starting new ventures or doing more, you know, talking to more folks like you and talking more to real estate shops. I love doing this kind of stuff. Or just hanging with my family, going, you know, traveling places or something like that, or you know, be traveling around and doing more tours to talk real estate in person with people across the country, that whole thing. So.
Yeah, awesome. All right, Matt. Well, as we're wrapping up here, we've got a lightning round. Just a series of questions.
All right.
Fire at you. Cool. You just answer from the hip. How's that sound?
Let's do it, man. That'd be great. Cool.
All right. The first question we've got is, what was your biggest hurdle getting started investing in real estate, and how'd you overcome it?
Staying focused. Because I didn't have my goal set. So I really didn't know what my goals were for the year and what my exact measurable achievements were supposed to be for the year. So I just figured whatever I could do that would be productive would be good enough. And so I would do whatever I felt like doing. And so I would be working, but I really wouldn't get towards my goals. And so staying focused on my goals and taking direct action towards my goals and no other action aside from what would advance my goals would probably what slowed me down in the beginning.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a personal habit that contributes to your success?
when I do it, I get up early and I go and I plan my day every day. And so that habit works well. I probably do it about 75% of the time. And I read, take all my goals, and they're all written on this little Excel spreadsheet. And the actions I want to accomplish that week to advance my goals are written in this Excel spreadsheet. So then I take that Excel spreadsheet out and then I plan out what I'm going to do that day on a piece of paper. And my day's not done until I do everything.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Do you have an online resource you find valuable?
I got to plug biggerpockets.com, my friend. It's been a life changer for me in the contacts and the resources that are out there. So
yeah, that's how we connected, is on BiggerPockets. I mean, it's a plethora of information, phenomenal. Network, people, just everything. So yeah,
absolutely. Phenomenal stuff. It's been a game changer in the real estate business.
Yeah. Same here. All right, Matt, what book would you recommend to the listeners and why?
Well, okay. If they haven't read Rich Dad Poor Dad, they got to read that. But I would read one of Robert Kiyosaki's lesser mentioned books, which is Cash Flow Quadrant. It talks about, you know, the different types of people that are income earners. So being an employee, a self-employed person, like aka business owner, or aka like an attorney or CPA, that's the S. And then the B, which is a business owner. And then I, which is just an investor. So ESBI, it's on the cover of the book. It's called Cash Flow Quadrant. It's a phenomenal book, and it really opens up your eyes to the buckets you want to spend your time in as an investor.
Yeah, right. It's a great book that I've read, and it's almost as profound as Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but like you said, a little lesser known. Awesome.
Yeah, right. It's a little more nuts and bolts than Rich Dad. Rich Dad, Poor Dad just enrolls you in the dream. And Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it just exposes you to there is a different way to live life, a different way to look at making money. That's what Rich Dad, Poor Dad does. This is so many people speak to it because it's like, oh, wait, I don't have to work like trade hours for dollars. And Rich Dad Poor Dad says, no, you don't have to do that. And you could live and make money by, you know, running businesses or investing or doing things that pay you forever versus, you know, putting in time to get back money.
Yeah, that's a really good synopsis. Perhaps the best I've ever heard.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, Matt, last question. If you were to give advice to your 20-year-old self to get started investing in real estate, what would it be?
Oh, boy. Man, oh, man. I didn't invest until I was 30. I was very intimidated in my 20s and early 20s in by like larger numbers and by real estate and everything like that. And so I didn't do things in my early 20s that were scary to me. But I have found that the biggest growth for me came up when I acted into my fear. When I did what I was most afraid of, and I found that you think I'm not scared buying this 200 unit apartment building, figuring out what I'm going to do? It's 8 hours away from me, an 8 hour drive, you know? So yeah, I'm definitely trying to figure it out and worried about it, but it doesn't stop me from doing it. And I'll figure it out, and it's going to put me on, you know, like a whole nother level in my business and everything like that. And the success that I've had over the years has been always in acting into fear. And I didn't do that in my early 20s. I just kind of stayed comfortable and stayed safe. So I find by acting into fear and not giving up, just when things get tough, that working harder when things get hard has been the key to my success.
Yeah, awesome, Matt. Well, thanks for that. So as we're wrapping up, is there anything you'd like to leave with our audience? Any kind of parting piece of guidance?
Yeah, I was talking to a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago. Another is extremely successful. You know, guys, he's got an enormous painting company. And we were talking about the keys to success. And what we came up with were, don't quit, keep moving, like keep momentum. So AKA don't get stuck, right? And don't let your emotions get involved. So don't quit, keep moving, and don't let your emotions get into it, because we tend to allow like anger or passion or excitement make our decisions sometimes. And I think the more pragmatic you can be in real estate, the better off you're going to be. So those are my three tidbits of advice if they're worth anything.
Awesome. I like it. All right, Matt, where can our audience learn more about you and connect with you?
Sure. They can reach us at derosagroup.com. That's DEROSAGROUP.com. They can subscribe to our newsletter to hear about deals that we're involved in. They can, you know, hit connect with us on the website there. They can also look me up on Bigger Pockets, and they can also watch a lot of the videos that we have active on our YouTube channel, which you just search for DeRosa Group on YouTube and we'll come right up. We put out a lot of videos, about two a week we do, just real estate education, just giving back stuff that we've learned over the years and stuff like that in real estate. So it's DeRosa Group, DEROSAGROUP on YouTube.
Yeah, awesome. Those YouTube videos you put out are really fun and interesting.
Thank you.
I highly recommend people to go check them out. So,
thank you.
All right, Matt. Well, thank you very much for your time on the show today. We couldn't have thanked you enough.
Great. Thank you, Jacob.
All right.
It's been great to be with you.
Take care, Matt.
All right. That wraps up our interview today with Matt Faircloth. I hope you're getting value out of the show. If you have any questions or comments or want to hear something or someone specific on this show, reach out to me. You can contact me at www.jacobayers.com/contact or connect with me on Facebook at The Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom Podcast. Till next week, signing off, I'm your host, Jacob Ayers.
You've been listening to The Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom Podcast, providing you actionable content to build your real estate empire. Nothing on this show should be considered specific, personal, or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, financial, or business professional for personal advice. The opinions of guests are their own. Information is not guaranteed. All investment strategies have a potential for profit or loss. The host is operating on behalf of the Real Estate Way to Wealth and Freedom, LLC, exclusively.